Enthusiasm is really what I'd like to speak about tonight. The enthusiasm I feel for spending the time, as we have been doing over these days, outside. It's interesting, and I don't know if you sense or feel it in the way that I do, but there's a certain brightening that happens in you and me when we spend time outside, outdoors. And it comes from many things. Some of what it comes from is what we're engaged in while we're out there. Some of what it comes from is really born of the qualities and the very nature of that environment. But just beginning with that sense of a brightening, it's like we can feel, I think, life sometimes somewhat distant, somehow not really touching us to the depth that we can be touched. And there's a kind of a dullness that goes with it that we don't necessarily recognize as such, except we notice that there's a sort of almost a sense of something missing or lacking, or of not quite feeling the potential that we in some way intuit or perhaps know and even remember that our life can hold. It's somehow not feeling that there's access to that, that that's something we're in contact with. And in sensing a quality of brightness within us, I think it can be a very precious thing to encounter. Sometimes it just comes in that moment when we get to sit down after we've been walking in the heat, or there's a little bit of shade, and one just lands in oneself, and it's just a sense of a glow would be a little bit too strong a word there. Well, there's another word, another reason we use the word glow. I think it's a polite word for sweating, isn't it? I don't know if anyone was glowing today, but probably a few of us. But I'm not talking about that kind of glow. More than just a sort of a sense of, it's like the batteries of our life are actually producing energy, or the quality of our being is actually vibrating in a certain way. And this despite all the really difficult and uncomfortable things that we're, it seems, obliged to put up with on this retreat, and that strangely we consent to, agree to, and some people even come back and do it again, having known exactly what it was like the last time. And, you know, on the face of it, if one was to describe to one's friends or family what one does, you know, walking out in the really quite hot sun and sitting on some very sharp rocks all day, or much of it, one might think, well, what is the sense in all that? Why would one do this? And, you know, I think I may have already suggested that I suspect quite a few of you will have had that thought on occasion. Of course, the thought that arises in that way, perhaps at the beginning of the process, we don't quite know why, and yet somehow we're doing it. As we've been here now 3 days, practicing, being outdoors quite a lot of the time, being exposed to the elements, it's sort of like there's a way in which it's a little bit like the process that happens in the transformation of raw gemstones. I don't know if you're familiar with that process. It's nothing complicated. Raw gemstones, they look like just kind of slightly shiny-ish rocks, but not really that different than anything else, actually, unless you know what you're looking for. I'm not saying that I do, but someone who knows about gemstones can spot them. But the way they turn into those nice, shiny, beautiful, smooth, and almost glowing sort of things, gemstones, is they're all bunged in a large urn or a barrel together and just rub, it's sort of turned. That's the traditional way anyway. You know about this process? You've heard of this? So you get a whole lot of rough rocks, you put them all together in a space, and then you turn the handle on this container and they rub against each other. And slowly over time, all the sharp bits get rubbed off. All the hard bits that seemed so solid actually start to soften. And the shapes, the natural shapes that come out, tend to be smooth and curved. It's kind of a remarkable process when you actually look at what you start with and what you end with. And it's a little bit like that with us. That we're kind of put into a retreat situation. We're kind of like sort of mixing with each other and mixing with the conditions around us in a context where we're constantly rubbing up against. We're constantly rubbing up against. Although the rubbing sometimes isn't that comfortable, it has the effect of somehow polishing, smoothing, and ultimately allowing the brightness to shine. It's founded in the basic intentions that we bring, the motivations, the aspirations that carry us here, that we come, that we choose to be on retreat. And whatever it may be for you, and maybe they change. Maybe we don't even remember what it was. Catchy, that tune. We don't maybe remember what it was, and yet when we come to something like this, I don't think we do it. I don't think we could do it, or we certainly couldn't sustain it, without that somehow being grounded in the depth of our own goodness and the depth of our caring for life, for ourselves. And yet, there's this process of somehow being polished, somehow being rubbed by other things, other experiences that seem hard or that seem sharp or that seem pointy or jagged. And we do this. It's remarkable, actually, that we do this. The philosopher Spinoza once said, "All truly noble human endeavors are as difficult as they are rare." It's a rare thing in this world for people such as you and I to choose to subject themselves or to put themselves into a process as demanding and as challenging as this. It's rare, it is difficult, and it is noble. And it's so important to understand and to remember that. The nobility of this undertaking is part of what actually begins to shine. Now, we don't maybe have to think the word noble. We might not relate to it particularly. We think of sort of lords and ladies and kings and queens, and it's really nothing to do with that. But nobility is something that is born of how we live our life. So something that the Buddha said again and again. Not to do with who we were born, in terms of like our caste or our lineage or our blood or anything like that, our class, but it's how we live our life that determines nobility. And it is nobility that shines. And I have to say that I really do sense and see, and I suspect you also too, notice how we begin to shine as we go through this process. Even if we don't quite understand why, or even what that is that is shining. That's not really even required in the beginning to understand that. So I'd like to just reflect on some of the factors that contribute to this, that are part of what we're doing. What's it like when we actually do something, when you actually do something which you actually thought or imagined would not be possible? Or you would just never choose to do it if you had any option. What's it like to actually cross the threshold of the boundaries that we set for ourselves, the limitations we place around ourselves, but say, I'm not going there. I'm not. And no sane, I mean, you know the saying, don't you? Only mad dogs and Englishmen. I'm not an Englishman. Only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. That's because in England it's such a rare event, you've got to get it when you can. But like, are we to be associated with mad dogs for spending our day out in the midday sun? We maybe don't want to do that every day. But on the other hand, to go and do that and to see, and yeah, it is hot. And maybe it is a little uncomfortable at times. But there's something that happens when we actually go beyond a boundary that we've created. Because almost all of the limitations that we live our life by, or that define our life, are created. They're not absolute. They don't have inherent truth. And when we actually, whether we're nudged and gently encouraged or even pushed, or when it just happens and somehow we find that we've crossed one of those lines, whether it be that we stayed all day in the sun, whether it be that we actually allowed ourselves to feel something really tender in our hearts, perhaps sadness, perhaps joy, but to really contact it in a way that we might not have thought was possible for us, as spoken about doing. When that happens, there's not just the sense of opening or openness that comes from that particular limitation losing its solidity or its ability to limit us, to close us down or to define the territory that we cannot enter. It's not just that we actually become more or realize that we are more than we thought we were when that happens. We might not think it like this. It might sound silly to think it that way. Oh, suddenly I'm more than I was because I sat all day in the sun. Maybe more stupid, you know. Not that. But it's more like it's just a sense of something that grows, because the belief, the investment, the identification with limitation is somehow reduced, is somehow softened, is perhaps even beginning to dissolve. And not just this particular line that we crossed is affected, but all the lines that we draw around us, all the boundaries, all the limitations are actually, in the same moment, shown to be less solid than we believed. And it's those limitations we build around ourselves that are actually the only thing that really somehow seems to obscure the light from shining through us. The light of our life. The light of our aliveness. That reveals itself in the glimmer in our eyes, or the, as I said, the brightness that can seem to be there. Of course, we might be sitting there thinking, oh, it's all very well for whoever that was, but it certainly wasn't me. Brightness. Not likely. I was sitting there thinking, most of the day. It's true. So, why not? But if we come to the end of the day and say, all day, thinking, why am I doing this? Why is he making me do that? And then sometimes, you know, we can go through that for half a day, all a day, and we come. We arrive. It's back in the hangar, sitting on a sort of amazingly luxurious sort of surface. There's, you know, these rugs. I mean, in many situations, probably we wouldn't want to touch them. You know, not get down on our hands, but isn't it? Everything is soft and nice. It makes you look like they could do with a wash. But it's so relative, isn't it? It's so relative. All joy that comes when we start to strip away the unnecessary, the added stuff that we fill our lives with and fill our lives or and that we fill our lives with and we busy our lives with getting more of all the unneeded stuff. It takes sometimes so little for us to just be delighted, you know, just to find a nice flat piece of rock to sit on. Amazing how good that can feel compared to a bunch of sharp, spiky, pointy, uncomfortable ones. A flat piece of rock. Who'd have thought that a flat piece of rock, even a relatively flat piece of rock, could be a desirable piece of sitting apparatus? You know, the thing to seek out. It's so relative, isn't it? And sitting in here, if anyone offered us a flat piece of rock, we'd think, huh? I've got a cushion. But out there, it's like, wow, how nice. Or the food that we eat, you know, such simple fare. No butter, no sort of special sort of spices to put on it, just simple bread, trina or hummus, vegetables, salt, and peanut butter, you know. Like, and it's a banquet. I mean, it's so good. I hope it's good for you. I love it. I mean, today I was amazed to find myself, after hummus had run out, which it does, noting that hummus doesn't go as far as trina. You have to spread it more thickly. That was the first thought. But then, kind of like we see what our mind does. It's like, oh, I hope we have trina tomorrow because it lasts more. But that's not a message to the cooks. Hummus is fine. Really, fine. I love it. But what I found after, it's like, I had a piece of bread with peanut butter and a tomato. And it was really good. And there's no way I would ever imagine eating bread with peanut butter and tomato anywhere else, except that's all that was going. Or a carrot, which would have seemed even stranger. But probably if I'd eaten it with a carrot, it would have been good too. I'll maybe try that tomorrow. Or maybe not, we'll see. But it's like, what's going on there when something that simple and unlooked for can give that much satisfaction? What's going on there? Because it's an important lesson. It's like if we had some, you know, 4-star catering service delivering us a 3-course meal out there in the middle of the desert. I'm sure it would be nice. But would it really actually give us any more satisfaction than the simple food we carried, prepared and shared? I doubt it, actually. In fact, I think it would be more of a problem because you'd be worried about getting some dust in it. Whereas, you know, people balancing their sandwich on their knee, on their shoe, on their blanket, on the rock, it's all like, my gosh, we are so uptight most of the time, aren't we? You know, sure, it's appropriate to take care with, you know, hygiene and cleanliness and all that. In many situations, it's important. Sure, that's right. And look what happens sometimes when we just let go of the need to have it all just the way it's supposed to be. Which is inevitably what happens when we go outside. Because we can't carry 3-course meals and dinner serving sort of bowls and plates. And, well, if we do, we're going to be lugging so much weight that it's going to be miserable. So we don't even have a plate. Well, most of us not anyway. And what happens is that somehow our heart is lightened in the process by the discovery of how little it takes to really be happy, to really find joy. It's not something that we have to postpone to the end of our lives or the conclusion of many years, if not lifetimes, of arduous practice in which we're concentrating fiercely upon our nose or our belly. You know, a friend of mine in America, Rodney Smith, is a Dharma teacher. We teach together. He once commented, he said, you know, sometimes what happens, and I realized actually, thank gosh, interesting, okay. So you'll see why I've hesitated. This may not be funny, but anyway. I think I'd better conclude, or else you will wonder what he was going on about. He said, if you take Westerners with a tendency to low self-esteem and trying really hard, and put it together with a Eastern meditation practice that they haven't yet really understood, what you often get is concentration camps. Obviously, that's a resonance that's not entirely funny. My family were there too. And I don't really remember that when I tell that story, but there's a way in which we put so much pressure on ourselves. We put so much pressure on ourselves to somehow get to the destination of our journey. When it's actually the freedom we seek. and the lightness of being, the spaciousness of heart, the simple enjoyment that keeps life turning, rolling, alive, isn't so far away. There's a lovely story I really enjoy about a Sufi master. She was a great teacher and very well respected, had many, many students who would come and practice with her at her, I'm sure if it was a temple or a center, but anyway, the place where she was. And she would strongly encourage them to be very simple in their needs and in their material possessions, have very little in the way of entertainment or sort of stimulation or pleasurable sort of things just for their own sake. And so they lived a very austere life, very bare sort of circumstances, very simple food and clothing and accommodations. And she would regularly speak to them about the importance of this. And yet, every Saturday on the weekend, she was observed going down to the village market where there were all these amazing things for sale. All these things going, all this entertainment. And of course, all the students weren't allowed to go. But she would go down there and spend all day and come back with a big smile on her face, just grinning from ear to ear. And her students were sort of wondering, what's going on here? Finally, one of them plucked up the courage, said, Teacher, you speak to us so many times about the importance of simplicity and renunciation and not having things or getting involved with all of that. And yet, every weekend we see you, we watch you. You go down to the market, you spend all day there, and you come back looking so happy. Can you explain to us? We don't understand. And she looked at her student. She said, you know, I go down to the market every weekend because it gives me great joy to see all the things I am happy without. How many things we can be happy without? One of my teachers, a Tibetan teacher, Tony Rinpoche, he once suggested that it would be a great practice to be happy with no reason. Very interesting. Often we're unhappy with no reason. Why not be happy with no reason? Why make happiness depend on reasons? Because there's always reasons to be happy or reasons to be not happy. We think it's about the reasons. And it isn't really. And we see that every time something we thought we needed in order to be happy, in order to be comfortable, isn't there. And we find that nonetheless we are happy, we are comfortable. It's part of the process that allows us to feel the life that's in us, to let it actually be felt, to be shown, be revealed to us, actually. It's lovely to see it in others, but it's so important and so nourishing when we actually sense and feel it in ourselves. That brightening quality of possibility, or that uplifted lightness, that may ripen into joy or delight, but it doesn't have to. It may just be a quiet contentedness at the fact that one is able to sit or walk or stand or rest. And it's okay to do so. In which the process works upon us when we're outside. Is that there's a sense of space that's there. And it's kind of hard to miss noticing the space, the vastness, the incredible dimensions that are revealed when we're coming up to the edge of the Maktesh and seeing that sweep of distance. And we might just feel in that just a sense of how there is space around us. How there is space around us. But there's something, like it's compelling, I don't know if you sense this, but there's something compelling about looking into that kind of space. There's something about it that I, and I suspect you too, kind of, we just want to look into that. Like sometimes I'm kind of aware that we're walking along and it's sort of, there's this thing of walking along the side and wanting to turn and look at that space, but we've got to keep going this way because, you know, that's the way the line is going, and just got to watch for the rocks under my feet and all that. But there's that sense of wanting to turn, and when one does, it's like something just opens. I don't know if you notice this. It's like the sense of something opens when we, coming back this afternoon and going between that twin line in the sculpture of rocks, the big ones wide apart and then getting smaller, and then it just kind of, I don't know if that was the intention of the sculptor, but it was like that sense of just this little channel suddenly just bringing you to a place where space opens up. And it's like there's a transmission that happens. It's like we receive a sense of space from looking into it. And we receive it because it's within us and we recognize it. We can't and don't recognize anything out there if it's not also and already in here. How could we recognize it if it wasn't? It's not because we've seen it before. Because actually in those moments where we just open to something, actually we see it for the first time. That's part of the quality of that opening. And again, that's part of what happens sometimes when we're outdoors, when we're kind of the world weariness begins to dissolve off us, begins to soften around us. And it's just like, it's almost like it could take our breath away just to see space, that much space, empty space. And even a few cars buzzing around like insects in it, which might normally kind of be irritating. You think, well, what are they doing there? Get them out of my nice space. You know, actually, they don't really matter. They're kind of insignificant. They're even kind of, you know, interesting sometimes. It's like what's happening in that process. It's like something's reconnecting. Not just reconnecting, but perhaps we're becoming conscious of that reconnection happening. To connect with space. Vastness. It's really worth taking the trouble to do that. Not to do it, i.e. to make it happen, but to put yourself in the situation where it's allowed to happen, where it has time to happen. And that's kind of what we're doing. Just putting ourselves there and letting what happens happen. Much of our experience of what we call ourself is a sense of something that feels kind of dense, that feels kind of contracted, and that almost inevitably feels under pressure. It's such a common theme, a sense of being under pressure. In so many different ways, from, it seems, so many different causes. The pressure of other people's expectations of us. The pressure of our own desires for what we want and aren't yet sure how to find. The pressure of responsibilities to fulfill, to take care of family or children, relatives, parents, or our sense of entering into the world and taking on careers. Or even it can be a sense of a spiritual duty to somehow transform me into something which I'm not quite sure what. Pressure as an experience is something that isn't in enough space. That's all it is. That's not to say, when I say that's all it is, that that's to say it isn't something very strong at times, but something that isn't in enough space experiences pressure. Pressure is the sense of something that's confined and limited in its ability to expand as it needs to. And we, in the way we tend to define ourselves, and the way we put expectations upon ourselves, we limit ourselves. We tend to think, I must, I have to. When this is actually very rarely, as opposed to really, I don't know with my accent if I get that, it's very unusual that it's actually so, that we really have to do that. But we feel like we do. And it's like, because we feel and we identify with a sense of limitation, with a sense of smallness, with a sense of limited being in a vast, complicated, and certainly at times challenging and even threatening world that places so many demands and expectations upon us. we actually feel a sense of space. We not just perceive it outwardly, but we actually feel it. So we're open to sensing it. What that actually does, even if we don't, again, we might not conceive in this way, and it's not required to think of it like this necessarily. But the sense of space within us is actually connected to the sense of space around us. And what feels like not enough space actually starts to become the experience of enough space. And so what we notice is that the pressure doesn't feel so intense. Maybe everything that was there before that seemed too much is still there. It would be nice if it all went away, but it hasn't, mostly. And yet, it's somehow able to be held in something larger. Like when we were walking this afternoon, did you notice that it was different to walk further apart? Did you notice how that was? That maybe no one felt anything different. But certainly in the past, people have described a sense of just feeling like the pressure of being close to people wasn't there so much. And just noticing what that's like, if you experience something like that. What's it like to feel space? To feel how space dissolves pressure. And how we can actually allow ourselves to attune to where the space is. It's kind of obvious in the desert, we can't miss it. You know, well, you could if you tried really hard. But unless you're trying really hard to miss noticing all that space, you're going to feel it. And it's going to actually start to affect you. But much of the time we don't notice it. We don't know what it means to tune into it, where it is. It's like sometimes, like we're sitting together, we might feel like at the moment, you know, we're quite all close and, you know, huddled together. And in a room, if it feels very full, it sometimes seems claustrophobic, you know, like no space. And yet if you look up, you'll see that 3/4 of any room you're in is empty. All the space above you. There's nothing in there. It's, well, air. But we don't tune into that. We tend to look and focus our attention to where it seems there isn't space. Because what we think we're supposed to do is get rid of the things that are in the space. Actually, what we're asked to do is notice the space that's around them. Notice the space that's within them. And sometimes, being in something, being outdoors, it's like we notice that we're just one of the things within this vastness of space. And that it actually surrounds us, equally as it surrounds all things. When that's happening, there's a, it's almost like a breathing out, a relaxing that goes on. Again, this thought, the thought of what I'm describing may go nowhere near your mind. Doesn't matter. Checking in with one's body, one's heart, one's being, we just have the sense of it's just like, it's almost like a certain melting or a softening or a something changing. And in that, it comes because we start to feel part of something larger. Because actually, when we leave ourselves alone out there long enough, we almost can't help but start to feel a relationship to the fact that it doesn't look anything like what I think I am. Because it's a pile of rocks and I'm something running around on 2 feet. And yet, strangely, it somehow, it's not like that, is it? When I said a pile of rocks, I almost felt a jar to me to call it that. Because it's not that, is it? I mean, there's so much there. It can speak to us when we allow it to. Purple flowers here and there. Amazing. In that harsh, dry, spiky, arid condition, these soft, pale, purple flowers just pop out to say hello. And you know, unless you're walking slowly, probably one doesn't notice them. But when we slow down, and I notice when I'm not thinking about where we're supposed to be going and whether I'm going to find the way or not, and I'm sure you have things you think about as well on occasion, and when you just see this little flower, you think, wow. You know, sometimes it can feel like our lives are really tough, because they can be. It can be an incredible number of difficult things we have to deal with as a human being. And yet sometimes to see something like a little flower growing in the desert, you realize, yeah, I'm not alone. You know? If that little guy can do that, maybe I can do this. And for me, there's a sense of just the incredible, it's almost like the unstoppableness of life. It's like, even we, it's hard, you know, okay, those kind of really sharp, spiky plants that seem to be just thistles, or just spikes, you know, they always kind of make sense out there, you know. But those little flowers, it's like, there's something about life's softness and its aliveness and its beauty that just pops up again and again and again. And like, if we feel our hearts hard or raw or distant from us at times, and we may wonder how to find our way back, part of that journey is just trusting that life keeps on bursting forth unstoppably. And it does, in us and through us, again and again. Even those lizards, I don't know if you've seen any lizards out there, maybe I scare them all away. But probably some of them have come back by the time the next person turns up. And it's like little creatures. And, you know, they're just doing their thing, and then they see something, and it's, I guess, scary, and they're gone, and they move so fast. It's like, whoomph, they're out of here. You know? And one might think, well, gosh, I can't move that quickly. But you're wrong, your mind moves even quicker than that. When we see a mind going towards something we're a bit scared of, whoosh, goes off somewhere else that quick. I saw a lizard today, it went running off, and I think it must have misstepped on a rock or something, because it virtually flipped over, it was running so fast, and bounced back up and kept going. It's like something out of a cartoon. And it was a bit like that. I thought, oh yeah, my mind does that. If it moves so quickly away sometimes, we kind of fall over. We lose our ground. We don't know where we are. Seeing how there's experiences that happen out there that are just kind of like it seems the experiences that happen in here. There's a transformation that happens. When we start to feel, when we start to sense, and it can be just moments where we just are touched by something. Just the shape of a rock. You know, how many rocks have we looked at in these last, how many have we seen, sat on, kicked, cursed perhaps? And yet suddenly just one of them just pops out of this billions of rocks, and one just sees it, and there's just something about the shape, or the curve, or the colour. Or this one I saw today that was like 100 different pieces of clay, or plasticine, all pressed together. You could see the boundary of each shape, and yet they were one rock. And it just, something in the heart just goes, oh, wow, look at that, amazing. You know, it's probably the kind of thing that if you take it home and look at it, you think, rock. Why did I carry that home? Because it's not just in the rock. It's not actually, it is in the rock, but it's in the being. It's in the alive connection that's seeing without any filters, or not so many, something that's remarkable. Because the fact that we're seeing it is remarkable. Because the fact that we're alive is remarkable. And just letting our lives be stripped down to that is what happens, even if we're desperately trying to avoid it happening while we're out there. Because it's a little scary sometimes. And yet when we move through that territory, we find ourselves more than we had imagined ourselves to be. poem by Mary Oliver. The Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to crawl on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You have only to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you about mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. May we, in our practice and our lives, come to know space that is around us and within us, and our connection to life, to truly realize our place in the family of things. Another 15 minutes for some walking meditation. Have a sitting at 9:05. Ring the bell at 9:05. We'll have the sitting just after. Thank you.